The Jerry Doyle Show.
We have a member of Congress from Minnesota who says the United States is not ready for a female president. That member of Congress is a Republican, and that Republican is a woman. That woman is named Michelle Bachmann. You know her, Michelle. No show, no go, no repeal, show vote, Bachmann. She says America is not ready for a female president. Now, our guest, in my opinion, is someone who could be president. She's smart. She articulates her message very well. She has solid core beliefs. She's not polarizing. She's passionate. That's what her husband tells me. But she only has one thing going against her. She's too honest. Joining us on the program, Anita Finley, author, actress, blogger, EpicTimes.com contributor. Her book, Dirty Words on Clean Skin, spending 16 weeks, number one position on Amazon's Women in Politics list. Anita, welcome back.
Jerry, thank you so much. First of all, you have to stop talking to my husband about me behind my back. That's number one.
Well, then you have to tell him to stop paying me. Or I have to stop paying him, I should say. Anyway, I'm good. Friday, you know, I love Fridays. It's not because the week's over and I get to, you know, do the weekend kind of stuff. But it's just like Friday to me is just a transition day for people who have the 5 and 2, you know, kind of a work week that that a lot of people do have. It's just like, you know, it's been a good run. It's been a good week. You know, we spent the time with people on the program. And Friday's just kind of like, just lower the shoulders a little bit, have a little bit more fun, and kind of segue into that time when you're supposed to spend time having a good time.
Well, golden hour always looks a little prettier on Friday out here. That's all I can tell you.
Doesn't it, right? What do you think about Michelle Bachmann? The U.S. is not ready for a female president. I just, in so many areas, that goes, it doesn't make sense to me because the Republicans are trying to do an outreach to women. That doesn't seem to be female-friendly. They're trying to expand the tent. That seems to be a little closed off-ish. And you've got a woman saying that about a country that's not supposedly ready for a woman. There's got to be some angle here that I'm missing.
Okay, so here's the angle that you're missing. The Republicans at this point, let's take it apart piece by piece. First of all, when the president did his State of Union address, you had four different Republicans answering him. If there was ever an indication that they are a fractured party at this point, and I'm not trying to criticize or beat a dead horse here, but I think they're beating their own horse dead, as it were, because women are 53% of the voting electorate right now, and they know they have to do a big outreach to women because they got kicked in the you-know-where to the tune of 12 points. In the 2012 election. So first you have Rance Priebus and Rand Paul and everybody else dredging up all sorts of nonsense about Hillary, who is arguably, if she runs, and she likely will, a formidable front runner in 2016. So what are they doing? They're blaming her for her husband's transgressions from 20 years ago. That is not going to sit well to any woman, whether she's conservative or liberal, if she was ever wronged by a cheating spouse. That's number one. Then you have Michelle Bachmann, who herself tried to run for president. She knows she's going to get media bias. You know, I even covered her in my book. I know what it's like when you get on the cover of Newsweek and they give you a cockeyed picture. This is an attractive woman. They photographed in a cockeyed way and called her the Queen of Rage. So she's been on the receiving end of this, too. But, you know, her point is that the only reason they elected a black president is because we felt guilt, but nobody feels any guilt about women, and there's no compulsion to elect one. That was her position. And insofar, that statement in a nutshell, that by itself, I can see her point there, because we in this society still have a stereotyped idea that women are supposed to, we are meant to, as mommy, to step aside to help our son, to help our spouse, to help the man excel. We still have that stereotyped idea in the back of our mind, somewhere in the psyche, and I think that's what she's speaking to. But if Republicans are trying to reach out to women, I think, you know, she's sort of tripping over her own feet there, because she, as a woman, knows what one reality is, and I think she's trying to tote the party line at the same time, and so that's what's difficult. You're not going to do any sort of outreach to women. She was aiming that shot, by the way, at Hillary, because she's trying to put her down, you know, to say, oh, we don't need that, we don't want that. But remember also that Congresswoman Bachmann also made the comment, when we're still talking about women do not have pay parity in the workplace. She said, oh, we talked about all that 30 years ago, you know, as if to say, oh, all that bra burning, aren't we done with that? She knows better than that. She knows she's right. being disingenuous there. So, you know, I guess my point is, no matter who you like or don't like, you know, Hillary is always going to be a lightning rod for all of this, but that's sort of beside the point right now. If you want to talk about outreach to women, that's the, you know, talk about the exact wrong way to go about it. They just keep shooting themselves in the foot.
Yeah, and she doesn't need to talk in code. If she's talking around Hillary Clinton, just say, look, we don't need Jeb Bush versus Hillary Clinton in 2016. That's not moving forward. Case dismissed on political dynasties. Okay, we can go with that. But she's got so many wrong things here. I mean, and the Republicans trying to reach out to the black community, she said, plus she's a woman and she isn't black. And I mean, that's certainly not going to get black America's attention to go, hey, the Republicans, they get it. They don't get it.
No, it's also insulting. But here's something else I want to point out, since I am billed as a feminist. I always take offense when somebody calls Hillary Clinton part of a dynasty. Her name is Hillary Rodham Clinton. She's not a Clinton. She's a Rodham. And just right. because she's married to the guy, that doesn't make her part of the dynasty. The Bush is a dynasty because it's the fathers and the sons. So it really is, you know, saying that she, again, once is taken away from having her own separate identity. Whatever the husband does, therefore they move as a unit and she's going to be a carbon copy of him. I don't believe that. I don't buy it. And I don't buy that people do not have to listen to what sort of a policy she may put forth in the future if she puts her hat into the ring. They need to hear what she has to say. And then if they decide to reject it on that basis, that, of course, is their right. But here's another thing. You know, the media, as you know, is in a feeding frenzy about her. And they are doing all of this speculating and saying, well, why hasn't she chimed in on how she feels about NSA wiretapping? And I started laughing about that. She's going to have a problem in her campaign. No, she's not. We're 3 years out. She hasn't even declared yet. And they're saying, well, she better chime in. No, she doesn't have to do anything that you tell her she has to do. When she would be an idiot to do that. If she when she's ready to run, then I'm sure we're going to know what she thinks about everything.
Right. Well, you know, you as a former Democrat now, unaffiliated independent, me as a former Republican, now independent, would probably be in agreement with a lot of people in the audience that would think that Hillary Clinton would have been a much better president than Barack Obama.
No, of course. Absolutely. You know, there's no doubt about that. But, you know, she was more prepared at that time in 2008. And whether it's Paul Krugman or any economist was saying that her plans for the economy, her understanding of the economy and foreign policy was certainly far superior to that of her far less experienced opponent. But, you know, to get back to what you were talking about in the Republican field, Michelle Bachmann making that comment as if to say people only voted for Barack Obama because of his pigmentation, no matter, everybody's got their own opinion about that one, and I'll leave that for another day. But the fact is, she's not going to get very far making that comment when you're trying to do outreach to both women and to the African-American community. Talk about epic fail. You know, that's exactly the kind of rhetoric they don't want. And I wanted to ask you this, too, because, you know, I'm sure you have more connection in this area than I do. Do you think that there's a sense in the Republican Party that because they need to hold on firmly to their base, because they feel sort of abandoned in other ways, that they're sort of doubling down on what is red meat to the base right now, or even what Rand Paul is saying about Hillary? He figures, well, if I run and I get the nomination, then I can go scoot to the center like everybody else does. Right now, I need to throw a lot of red meat to the base. Is that what they're doing?
I think yes, and yes. I'll say yes that they are a red meat abortion, gun rights, God gaze. That's kind of what the red meat white right uptight Republican Party has been trying to get elected nationally on, and they've lost 5 of the last 6 national elections on a popular vote. So it's obviously not working. But I do think that they're doubling down and telling them, we're going to sing that hymn again. We're going to sing it. Didn't we sing it? Yes, we're going to sing it again. We're going to sing that. We're going to sing it again today. But we've been singing it for the last 8 years. But we're going to sing it again today. And they think that by singing the same hymn, that somehow that church is of Republican ideology is going to expand. It's not. When I look at what Rand Paul is doing, I think he's also got another purpose to why he's calling out Hillary Clinton. I think he's trying to establish himself within the Republican Party that he is willing to stand up to the Clinton machine. And where other people might not be wanting to tread, I think he's trying to cut his teeth as someone who's not going to be thrown by anything inside or outside the party. So I think he's got a little political positioning that's going on with that, too.
I think that's a very good point. I think that is very true. However, he's got to know that toe-to-toe with her, she's going to, you know, chew him up. I mean, she's not going to put up with any of this, and she can speak for herself. So as long as he's prepared for that, then right. That's great. But, you know, I wanted to make one point about this, because I really, in general, I criticize my own ex-party as much as I would say anything about Republicans, and that's not my bent, is to beat up on them. I have a selfish purpose that may seem a bit unusual. As being that we have a two-party system in this country, I really am aggravated with my old party, the Democrats, and, you know, of course, I'll always be a moderate at heart anyway, but I get aggravated that they win elections by saying, vote for me, I'm not as bad as the other guy.
Yeah.
And so what I would like to see is, you know, both parties feel like they honestly have to compete for our votes, and in the name of a rising tide lifts all boats. Then, you know, if they had to work a little harder for us and wouldn't double down on the same silly policies, if we really put the fear of you-know-who in there, that they thought they were going to lose their phony baloney jobs unless they started putting forth better and more effective legislation, and both parties really doing more outreach. Think of it. If Republicans really, you know, did their fracturing and their new whatever rebirth and put forth something that is truly more inclusive instead of paying lip service to that and not doing it, then imagine what might happen to the debate overall in this country. Then we
sure.
have something to talk about.
Well, you know, we talk about losing Democrats and Republicans. I think people who are hyper-political are losing the ability to even get the attention of people who are so turned off by politics in general, that everything has become political. There was an article in Politico. There you go. I mean, we have a website called Politico that recently popped up, and it gets a lot of traction. But the headline is The Changed Politics of Late Night TV. My margin notes on that, Anita, are no more politics. Shun them. The congressional pin to me is like a scarlet letter. I want to be entertained at 11:30 at night by Jimmy Fallon or Jay Leno, or whether it's Seth Meyers, or whether it's Arsenio Hall, or whether it's David Letterman. I just, you know, the news is over. You want to just watch it and you just go. And then everything gets so carved up. They can't decide the cheese should be in a grilled cheese sandwich. I mean, everything is so hyper-political that people, I think, are just turning their back on anything that gets turned into something political to benefit a political person or party.
I think that's true, and the you know, now we've already started the 2016 election cycle, which I think is a disgrace, which Hillary Clinton has also said thinks is a disgrace. She's not interested in starting this up now, and it's just why should we? We have so many more issues that we need to deal with at the moment. And speaking of Jimmy Fallon, I mean, he's doing great. Look how hard he's working out there.
Yeah,
in his new slot on The Tonight Show, which I love. But, you know, once in a while he'll talk politics, but it just feels like he's not looking at that red meat, like that's the only thing we have to deal with.
Right. And, of course, you know, Fox today is going, oh, sure, like softball questions for Michelle Obama last night. It's whatever. It's a different kind of show. Not everything has to be political. Did you catch Jimmy Fallon's opening night on The Tonight Show?
I think I caught the second night. I don't know if I caught the whole opening. What was your favorite thing on there?
Watching him come out and not trying to leave a steamer right on his mark on the stage. He was so nervous. He kept going, well, I want to welcome everybody and welcome. And it's like that uncomfortable date where it's just like, oh, so you're from Atlanta. You asked me that four times. Oh, I did? Oh, okay. You're Atlanta.
You know? Yeah, but isn't that sweet?
It is, but I was just like, and everybody's
his
like.
Second night, he was much better. His second
yeah, absolutely. Night absolutely. But the LA Times was like dissing him because he didn't come out as Jimmy Fallon. from late night. He came out as The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon, and it didn't meet the LA Times expectations. But, you know, that first night, can you imagine the pressure that that guy was under to walk out on that stage after Jay Leno was there for 22 and Carson was there for 20? Was it Carson at 27, 32 years, something like that? I mean, those are big shoes to fill. You've, as an actress, you've worked on 24, big show. You've worked on other big shows. When you're the new kid on the block, when you're walking onto that set for the first time and everybody's staring at you and, you know, they hit the sticks and it's your time to perform, you can get a little tense.
It's terrifying. I mean, when I was doing Brothers and Sisters, you know, I'm playing a judge and I've got all the dialogue and I'm in the scene with everybody, including Sally Field, who I've been such a fan of forever, and she's, you know, one of the executive producers, and she's standing there, which may as well have two Oscars hanging from her ears. Very lovely and humble lady, by the way. But, you know, your whole thing as a hired gun walking into any of these shows is to hit your mark and not bump into the furniture, and you just want to make a great impression. When I was doing 24, I had three mobile cameras flying around me. I'm walking into a very dramatic scene in the middle of the outdoors, and there's 25 crew people standing around. And you
right.
know, yeah, of course. And that, I'm only mentioning that because that is the reality of the business. TV is shot very, very fast, but it is absolutely not one infinitesimal iota of what Jimmy Fallon was going through by means of pressure. And in his own show, and I've seen a lot of it, and if any of your listeners happen to watch that Jimmy Fallon collective they did, you know, like...
Yeah, the retrospective, yeah.
Best, greatest hits, as it were. I mean, he's worked very hard to build up his show and build up his program over the last, whatever, 5-10 years, however long it's been. And so, you know, he's earned this shot, and I think he's going to do great. I have no doubt of it. But
I have the first night. Yeah, it's got to be just big shoes and big nerves. Check out the mix they did of Brian Williams and Lester Holt rapping. It's 84 seconds long. It's absolutely phenomenal. I'll send you a link to it so you can take a look at it. We have it up on our Facebook page. Thanks, Anita. I appreciate you joining us on the program.
Pleasure, Jerry. Have a wonderful weekend.
Say hi to your husband. I'll be talking to get more dirt on you later, and have a great weekend. Stick with us. Wrap it up when we get back.
Jerry Doyle Show.